Delighted today to welcome onto our podcast Stuart Keith, Business Director at Extra Black. And I would say three things, really. I would say you're a colleague. We work together. You're a mentor. I learn from you. But I also consider you a friend. So great to have you on the podcast and really excited to talk about design and creative and all things data.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark. It's good to be here. Likewise, it's a pleasure working with you and the team on the projects that we have and are, and look forward to seeing what we explore today and see if there's any nuggets that we can uncover for people.
We'll try. I wanted to start today by talking about, you and I often talk about sophisticated developers. So obviously, for those of you that are listening in either for the first time today or you haven't seen before, you know, I'm managing director of Ray White Projects. We bring brand new projects to life. Stu and Extra Black are the creative geniuses that you know, it's what stops you while you're scrolling mindlessly on Instagram and Facebook. It's that beautiful picture. It's that image. It's that vignette. But we talk quite often about the sophisticated developers. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of developers in Australia bringing new residential product to market. What do you think, Stu, starting off, what do you think sophisticated developers are doing differently to run-of-the-mill developers, let's say that?
No, it's a good question. I'll talk in general terms. What I think that is happening is that developers are playing a longer-term game, in that they know they're going to be delivering a number of projects over an extended period of time, whether it's a large development that's got, it's going to take 7 years to bring all the buildings online, or just their ongoing business plan is to be an ongoing developer. They're more aware now that with each project that they bring to market, it is a reflection of them. It's part of their brand, or it's an opportunity for them to express their brand through the project. And making sure that any project that does go to market is aligned with theirs and the vision that they have and the values. For example, the reliability, the value and luxury, or being dependable, or whatever those qualities are that a developer has, bringing them through in every project and every touch point now of how they communicate, whether it's through a project or just as a developer direct to the market, and nurture people into their projects and all being well get a sale. Mm. So we're seeing a lot more developers understand that bigger picture. They're willing to invest a bit more in the project to help build their brand equity for possibly the next project. Mm-hmm. And they're also key that we've spoken about is they're looking at the data now. What data do I have, number one, about maybe picking the site, then the data on who's going to buy there, and the data on how do we then get to market and get the leads and get interest. So, and that's a really important part of what I think a modern developer's doing well.
Yeah.
Some a lot more than others. Mervax, I think, is a great case. Mm-hmm. Daycorp as well, multiple projects. There's a lot of communications out there. And I think more smaller developers who are going, you know what, this is what we want to do and we want to be around for a while, they're starting to understand that there's a lot of data that they can draw on that maybe they haven't before.
So how do you think then that data-driven decisions can change or transform the way a developer approaches a project?
Information or data points should drive all decisions in not only, again, like I said, the site location, but also what's the brief to the architect? Yeah, who are we designing for? Mm. Who's in that suburb and who's within that street even, or who's within that part of the village or whatever? Data points collected from, whether it's ABS, big chunks of data and very high level, easy access, all the way through to social media data, Google Analytics, all that sort of data can help inform decisions throughout the entire project lifecycle, even before us as sales agents and creatives are even involved. There should be a lot of data. And even when we get called in to start to look at the identity, we're all about data. Mm. Who buyer profiles? Who are they? How old are they? What do we know about them? What can we learn about them so that we make sure that the identity work that we do and the brand that we create for that project is going to engage with them, attract them, and serve the sales process. Mm. But also gathering, whether it's data or just the vision, for example, of the developer, where they want to be in 5-10 years, and what, and how do we make this project a step towards that as well. So whether it's data is in scraping the internet and getting some, you know, spreadsheet data or lookalike data or whatever, or whether it's just information points, we find it's absolutely critical before we can even decide where to go from a creative point of view.
Well, you and I have actually worked on a project together where, and maybe you want to share, I was going to say, can you share an example of where a sophisticated developer has used a collection of data to actually drive outcomes? But we were talking off air, we've worked on a project where that actually was the case.
Yeah, the one that I'm now thinking about might be different to what we discussed, but there's one where a stage two came out and it didn't go as expected. Certainly didn't go as well as stage one.
Mm.
And there was a shift in the creative and the messaging on the stage two.
Was there a new agency?
No, same agency. In-house team.
Yeah.
But there were, just due to agreements occurred, there was almost a disconnect with stage two from stage one. There was a lot of brand equity built and a lot of momentum built from stage one, and then it kind of jolted and lost that momentum again. And what we did, a data-driven moment within that, was to find out, and we got access to the data of who bought in stage one. We learned who they were, where they came, what were the suburbs that they came from, also how old they were, and we were then able to use that information to generate some buyer profiles that were, we thought, quite specific to the site and to the stage two, and reinvigorated that story. And it was a commuter orientated story, but what we realized from the data and the people who were buying in stage one, it was definitely more lifestyle.
Yeah.
Commuting and access to the city was more of a secondary, third thing.
Yeah.
And that's when we turned it to the suburb and the bay and all those sorts of things as well. So
let me stop you there, because you mentioned something there about you spoke to the developer and you got the purchaser data for stage one.
Yeah.
Something that we see a lot, and I'm sorry, but it blows my mind. So we're going to have a blow my mind moment here, is we go and chat to developers that are doing multi-stage projects, and it's, you know, quite often they'll keep the same sales and creative agency right through, but quite often they'll change, and there'll be a change of sales agency or creative agency at different elements of the stage. Twice now we've been brought onto a project at a latter stage, and we've gone, look, Mr. Sophisticated Developer, can we have your leads that were generated from the previous stages? Because we can use that for lookalike data, buyer segmentation, buyer profiling. And they say, we don't have that.
Mm.
And we say, what do you mean you don't have that? And we're like, you paid to generate leads. Who's got that? Oh, my sales agency's got that. First of all, so it's a two-part question here. Mm-hmm. One, have you experienced the same thing? Because we seem to experience that a lot, where developers don't keep the leads, never mind buyers, because there's only so many buyers. But then what advice would you have then for developers and sophisticated developers, less for sophisticated than the rest, who may not currently own or leverage their data?
It's definitely something they need to own. Mm. They need to capture that data. You know, developers go to great risk to bring projects to market, you know, and deliver on them. And an asset that they can create from a project is the database, you know, the leads that come in, the buyer information, which is, you know, that the buyer's the actual one who's engaged, so even more valuable than leads. And there's not only there's the buyer details or the lead details, but then there's the cookies. Yeah, that's changing a bit now with algorithm and privacy and things, but getting those cookie pools and being able to then roll that into the next project and continue to build that buyer group or that nurture group, for want of a better term, into the next project. And that's where, yeah, we talk about the sophisticated developer, is that they're thinking beyond just the sale, right, for this particular project. Hang on, how do we build a following, or how do we start to have an ongoing conversation with people who are interested in us, or even more importantly, have bought from us? How do we get them to buy from us again?
Yeah, for sure.
So they might have bought first home buyer, but then over a few years they might get some equity and they've probably advanced in their career. They could then become an investor 100%. Customer. Yeah.
Especially if they've bought well, right? And there's equity in whatever they've bought.
Yeah. So we've had a quick story is I know a developer many years ago where we got commissioned to do a project. They let us know and said, we'll be in contact in about 6 weeks, no problem. Mm-hmm. And then within 2 weeks, they're ringing up and going, Stu, we need to get a hoarding up. I'm like, what do you mean? What's happened? Well, we found out that up the road, somebody's coming to market. And we believe that if we let people know in market, our local market know that we're coming, we can defer sales. And sure enough, they did. Yeah, to the value of over $20 million, they think, was the shift.
That again talks to the data, right?
Yeah. Talks to the data in a couple of ways of, well, yeah, there's a couple of things. There's data. They were managing their database and letting them know that they had something planned earlier than they wanted to, but they still did it, communicated. But they also had a growing brand so that people knew that I know this company or this developer. They've been around for a long time. Yeah, they're delivering. They're maintaining the after sales, the whole thing. So they were able to have $20 million not go up the road. They were able to have that $20 million come into their sales pipeline 3 or 4 months later when they were actually ready to receive the sales.
Right.
So there's a few things there, data and brand.
Yeah.
Yeah, are really important in the play out there at the moment especially. And when you are across your data and understanding the value of that database, that asset, I think you can really make quite a difference to your business.
So if tip number one to become a sophisticated developer is data before design, or even data by design, everything should have data in it.
Yeah.
Just trying to throw it out there for you.
Yeah.
I now want to touch now on what you've just mentioned, which is, for those of you that may not know out there, when a developer launches a project, it could be 50 apartments, 100 apartments, 500 apartments, it takes time. And quite often, if you're building anything over 50 apartments, you've got at least 18 to 24 months of building, of lead generation, mm-hmm. of putting your product in market. How important is it for developers to establish their brand alongside the project? Because what I mean by that is the project will run for 2 years, but then that project becomes part of their portfolio, part of their legacy, part of their gravitas.
Mm-hmm.
How important, therefore, is it for them to actually be building two brands and simultaneously?
Yeah, incredibly important. So there's a couple of things there is that it's really powerful to when selling that if somebody can actually walk through the product. That's the bench, that's this. And I'm talking if it was already built, right?
Yeah.
And to sell it is a very powerful way to get somebody to buy. Getting somebody to buy off the plan, part with some money or whatever that might be, or especially if it's a first home buyer, because that's the first home they're buying, right? They've got their parents maybe friends and lawyers, and they're all going, how do you know? Are you going to lose your money?
Well, don't worry, first home buyers. We'll have people on the show here to help you through that. But yes, they all panic.
They do. And to a point, right? And that's where a developer brand supporting a project brand can be very powerful.
Mm.
That they've been around for a while, they've got the credibility story, they've got this reliable and approachable brand or whatever that may be, professionalism, delivery, and that supporting the particular project in that suburb, whatever it is incredibly powerful. To have someone consider their project over somebody who's maybe new or only got a couple of runs on the board, and also that value of that building brand or that developer brand is very hard to measure, unfortunately, but because you never really go, would you buy or not buy from, and you're comparable. But we all know we've got our favorite brands, whether it's for our phone or for our watch or for our clothing. We're going to go to that brand first to give it the option. Have they got something that I'm looking for? If they haven't and it's a really specific thing, then you'll start to explore. Until then, you'll do almost quite a lot to convince yourself to stay local or stay with that particular brand. So same thing can happen with developers and buildings.
So what strategies do you think could developers use to ensure that their projects contribute also to long-term brand equity? So if a developer is launching a project in 2025 or 2026, what are the kind of things they should be considering so that there is an alignment between not only what we're doing now, but what we may do in the future and what we've done in the past?
Well, yeah. So again, what would be interesting, that's a good question, because how much does the developer understand itself as a brand? I'm a developer and I've been doing it, and then 15 years later I find myself I've got two or three projects on the run at once or whatever it might be. And sometimes my experience is that you start to ask a couple of those questions, where are you going to be in 3 to 5 years and what's the essence of your business that we can bring through? And you can see them think and ponder and go, and it's probably not as defined as clearly as it could be.
Mm.
That would help drive the messaging and the comms of that particular developer business. Mm. And that then can also inform how the project is articulated when it goes to, and what the messaging is, but more so how it's articulated going to market. And that concise messaging or that concise narrative of the developer brand is really important, not only for them and their business long term, but also when they introduce a project, it allows for that almost seamless transition from, oh, it's so-and-so, okay, what have they got? Oh, let's have a look at that project.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Maybe name me one or two developers who you think do that really well.
I think Mervac is really good.
Yeah.
They've got house and land. They've got apartments in many different scenarios and suburbs across New South Wales alone and the country. But their communication is consistent.
Mm.
It's frequent, and it can be probably as frequent as you want it to be as well. You can manage that, which is good. And then they really showcase particular projects or particular milestones within their business really well. When they've won a lot of awards and all those sorts of things,
you can almost start charging a premium because your brand now contributes a bit of equity to that property.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, 100%.
Take Gurner, for example, right?
Yeah. Well, Mervac, Gurner, they're brands that, again, they can be seen as emotive that I've bought from Mervac, and that's a bit of a badge to wear, and Gurner is a bit of a badge to wear. So that's, again, how a brand can serve you as a business, in that it's getting those loyal fans to buy, even if it is deemed a premium, or somebody says, oh, there's too much for that. Well, hang on, but it's a so-and-so project. I've got to buy into it. But at the same time, they understand that ongoing investment in the brand and the communication to nurture and reassure and introduce new people to their products and their future projects.
Okay. So far we've got data, not design, focus on the data. Secondly, we've got that, a project should always be seen as part of a portfolio for the brand. And improving on that brand equity and building brand equity alongside it, which over time could actually lead to premium pricing and even a premium sales velocity. So the last thing I want to touch on is, you just mentioned there about how having consistent and reliable communication when you spoke of Mervac was so important. What role, this brings me to my third point, which is, all right, we've spoken about a sophisticated developer having the right data, understanding how that data and that project fits into the ecosystem of their own brand and their buyer pool that associates with the brand, not just the project. What role does consistent communication play in maintaining buyer interest now over the life cycle of a project? Because it's not a 1 month campaign and then it's all sold out.
No.
Yeah, those days are over, nor do developers with construction costs these days want to sell out their development in the first weekend. It doesn't actually equate to a unique result anymore.
Yeah.
So what role do you think that now ongoing, consistent, reliable communication plays now in maintaining buyer interest?
Buyers who've bought? Or
maybe. I'll let you go with both.
Yeah, well, so if somebody's bought early in the project, you talk about buyer's remorse, and having that ongoing reassuring communication is important, whether that's broad market or getting sophisticated with your data, that here's the buyers, here's who's bought from us, here's who exchanged, and let's have a separate conversation with those guys. What are they worried about? What are they excited about? What are they worried about? What are they possibly thinking at this stage? They've put this money down, they've signed up to a future mortgage, and they're going, but I'm not going to be able to move in for quite a period of time. And how do they not pull out, or what is that? How do we keep them number one, reassured that, again, if they're at an evening dinner on a Saturday night and dinner with friends and somebody says, oh, we've bought in at so-and-so, and somebody maybe starts, oh, really? Oh, what'd you do that? I think they're little moments that we need to consider, well, I suggest to consider, is just reassuring. We're on track with this. We're on track with that. Updates, you know, they can be more broader, but maybe what is that? That ongoing conversation direct with that person or that buyer, that everything's okay, it's on track, we're on, you know, you're going to be moving into your new home as expected or when agreed. So I think that it's incredibly important, brings peace of mind. And from that, number one, will they buy from you again if they've had a great experience? Probably. And are they going to refer you?
Yeah, I think that's
the thing at the dinner where they go, no, I hear what you're saying, but they said this, they've reassured that. I love how they keep, you know, reaching out. Somebody even rang me last week, and then that person who's maybe considering buying would be like, right, okay, that's an option.
You know, that follows on social proof.
Yes,
and also, you know, I suppose having faith in that, you know, my friend's done this, they've had a great experience, maybe that's where I should go. So what can developers, or how can developers create a communication strategy that actually aligns with both the brand and project goals?
Okay, that's... Say you've got a database of 15,000.
Okay.
Over the last 5-10 years or whatever it might be. A sophisticated approach could be that you start to data segment exactly who have we got in our database here, who are the different groups that we potentially have within it, and designing a very unique and bespoke conversation with those different groups. Again, what are they concerned about? What do they want? Where are they maybe in their life stage? You know, and how do we anticipate?
So building that brand equity while they may not actually be in that purchasing. We always talk, you and I, about the funnel.
Yeah.
And the very, very top of the funnel. But maybe it's even before they've come in the top of the funnel, they keep getting reinforced with a brand. And then when that life cycle appears of, I need to move, I need to buy, I need to whatever, you know.
Or my kids are going to be going for their first place, whatever. Yeah, so let's, you know what, I've got this. They seem pretty good. Let's go and have a look at their display suite or whatever.
So should I understand that to be, you know, sophisticated developers are segmenting the database, there's data, and then understanding that communication should be a combination of, this is what I've got now, but this is who we are, both historically and into the future, should you be interested, or your friends or family or children or whatever be interested in the property market. And the communication should align to that, to different segments of the funnel?
If you can.
Yeah.
But it takes effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big investment.
It starts with the data, doesn't it?
It starts with the data, somebody to sift through the data, somebody to strategically, you know, think through what's possible with the data if they want to mine it and segment it out. While I'm saying these things, I know it takes time. I know it takes teams or supports and the right partners to do it. However, I think that it's something that businesses could, or developers could do earlier in their stage.
Definitely.
And I think that they would, it's not something that you'd necessarily get an immediate and direct response from all the time, but over time, nurturing, it would start to gain momentum. And it's a bit like sometimes on YouTube or whatever it is, something just goes little, you know, a few likes or a few views, and all of a sudden something happens and it goes off, yeah, and it's viral or whatever it might be. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that consistency is what's going to bring credibility, reliability. It's going to reassure. It's going to make people consider you. And, again, time in market and you're consistent. You don't confuse or have people – second guess. If you're consistent with that strategy of where you're going, it will pay off. And again, the Mervax and other big businesses, they're enjoying a lot of people buying from them again, and really strong sales that allows them to operate on the scale that they are today.
Epic. All right, so in ending, yes. I'll put you on the spot again.
Okay.
Maybe get you into a bit of a sweat. We've spoken about some pretty big and established developers, sophisticated developers on this, Mervac, Gerner, a couple of others we've mentioned. For the smaller more family-orientated developers who in their mindset would also like to be sophisticated, three things these developers could really focus on in 2025 to elevate their game and no matter the size, no matter the scale, start to operate, think, and drive in the way a sophisticated developer would?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
If you are a small developer player and you're coming second or third in, I would go digital first.
Love that.
Yeah. Invest
why?
In
why?
Why? Well, it allows you to test and measure. Mm. Yeah. It allows you to invest in good creative like Extra Black, you know, and we would again pull on data and assist with getting the best possible start, so to speak, from an identity and going to market strategy. And go digital first, digital brochures, get a digital presence and start to see how maybe the market is responding to you and your product. And even how that brand is starting to resonate or not. And you can then make some adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then at the time of committing to a display suite or even committing to, building a display suite and even investing in even print production of brochures can be expensive.
Yeah.
You've got more of a refined or honed tool to work with that is going to be all being well more aligned with the buyers that not only what you thought, but actually who's now actually engaged or showing some sort of interest. And then you can just shift a little, all being well, with the strategy we've done, it's not much of a shift at all, but just make those small messaging adjustments maybe, in how you position.
From that segmentation?
That can be from segmentation. Again, coming back to the beginning, it's just what data points are coming back from the digital. Yeah, whether it's a brochure and how people are responding, whether it's
phase one for developers in 2025 is get your data.
Yeah.
Surely you can't be dealing with sales agencies anymore that can't give you data or can't share that data with you. Two,
it's incredibly valuable, yes.
Two is then thinking about new ways of coming to the market, as you've just said, try digital first. We're huge believers. Some of you may just be hearing test and measure or measure and test for the first time, but We live that every day, you and I, right? We always say, in God we trust, everybody else brings us data. Mm. Test and measure. And then would you say consistent and reliable communication that is following two streams, one, your brand over time, and two, that project in particular?
Yeah, that consistency is required, especially if you know you're in long term, this is your career and maybe your legacy for your family or whatever that may be. Being clear on that long term approach, being clear on the brand and how it talks to that, what's its narrative and what's its messaging and what its values and all those core things need to be clear. It's really easy then to move from that point to have posts done and have copy written and all those other elements. Yeah, you can then if the narrative is clear, then it allows not only your internal teams but external partners to take that brand essence and that brand guidelines and roll it out in a consistent way. So you're building the equity in that way, and then with projects again, your projects are going to market and they're aligned with your developer brand. You're going to have a good start.
100%. In ending, I've got to share a story. I mean, we both worked on a project. We won't mention any names on this podcast, but we both worked on a project where very reputable developer. They used a data-driven approach in that they decided to actually launch at a time of year that was, let's call it, slightly unusual. It's not the usual time of year to launch a project, September, February, where everybody rushes to the market. But they made a data-driven approach where they worked out there weren't a lot of competitors in the market. There were competitors coming. There were competitors who had just finished.
Yeah.
So the data was pointing to maybe this was an opportunity, a gap. Extra Black on the creative, we really went into deep segmentation and data from previous purchases that had taken place in the region from this developer. And by throwing all that data together and driving segmentation, premium messaging and messaging both for the brand and the project, resulted in the fastest pre-sales ever achieved in that suburb, working between Ray White Projects and Extra Black.
Yeah. So it's... data certainly informs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go, no go, or, steps along the project as well. There's always that anomaly factor that you don't know about, which may be why something takes off. But I think that if you look at the data and market trends and then sub-market trends and suburb trends or whatever the data you've got access to, I think you can really gain a lot of confidence in when to make some of those decisions of when you do go or not. Mm. If you're unsure, you can do the test, you know, and measure sort of approach. But, the more information from the more sources you can get, you're going to minimize risk. You're going to, all being well, engage more deeply with the buyer groups that are identified in that data. And all being well, you're setting yourself up for success. So, yeah, they talk about location, location, location. And I sort of talk about data, data, data. So
I don't think we can add anything to that.
Well, that's when, you know, location for buying and for launching, we'll go with data, data, data. So
for those of you listening out there, property is not location, location, location. It is data, data, data.
Well, when it comes to marketing anyway,
for sure. Think, so. Stu, Business Director at Extra Black, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, mate.
Thanks very much, Mark. Thank you. Thanks for having us.